right here, so. Oh, we topped it. We cold topped it.
Okay. Ready to go. Yeah.
Eight iron.
Oh, we shanked it. Oh, look at that line, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, boy, is he out of sync.
Welcome to the Bogey Boys podcast.
You're joined here by Kevin and Mark, as always. And we've got a guest, Mr. Daniel Gaunt. How are we, brother?
Very good. Thanks, guys. How are you?
Very well.
Yeah, very well. Thanks for coming on the show, Dan. Appreciate you taking the time.
No, no problem at all. It's always great to join you guys on the podcast anytime.
Yeah. How's things for you at the moment? Obviously, I know we're going through a lockdown at the moment.
Yeah, it's okay. We can see the light at the end of the tunnel, I suppose. But yeah, it's been. I've personally struggled quite a bit with the lockdown. You know, I like being out and about and doing stuff and stuff like that. And obviously, with the way financially, you know, probably being one of the excluded people to not get any help from the government, and yet they still expect us to pay the mortgage and pay the bills and all that sort of stuff. So it has been quite stressful, but you know, you do what you have to do to get by and feed the kids and stuff like that. So, you know, the light is at the end of the tunnel, and we're gonna crack on, and golf will start up soon.
Exactly. And I will, hopefully there's brighter futures ahead. But before we get into the future, we go back to where it all began in Australia, I believe.
So I started when I was probably about 10. You know, my parents had a farm. Well, my grandparents had a farm, and we got the house on that farm. Mum and Dad were renovating the house, and me and my brother would just go out and hit golf balls. My dad was a golfer. Mum started playing golf, and we used to just, while they were decorating and stuff, just hit balls up and down the paddocks and stuff like that. And that's how I got into it. I was always a very sporty person. I'd play Aussie rules football, I'd play basketball, netball. Every different night I was playing something different. So I was a fit young lad. And basically when I was about, I think it was about 14, we weren't allowed to join the golf club until we were about 14 or 15. It was just one of those rules back in the day, but the local club let us join. I was still playing Aussie rules football at that stage, but I was still really small, and I was still going in quite hard and getting knocked out every week. And then after a while, it took its toll, and I just sort of lost my love for the football. And Dad just basically said, make a decision. Do you want to play football or do you want to play golf? And I chose golf.
What was it like growing up in Australia playing golf? Because I say we were getting a feel for the setup in England and what it takes to get into the England national setup as an amateur. But in Australia, what was it like growing up playing over there?
It was fantastic. Like, we've got some of the best golf courses in the world. I grew up about half an hour north of the Melbourne Airport in a little town called Romsey. It was a 12-hole golf course. The greens were probably, I remember going back in 2015 and I stepped the first green out. It was 12 steps long and about 11 steps wide. That's how big most of those greens were, and they're all raised about 2 feet, so even though it was a short golf course, it's a really tough golf course. So for me, once I progressed to go to Melbourne, when my golf got a lot better, I went to Melbourne and then started playing on the Sandbelt golf courses, and I was blown away by how good the facilities are, everything, because I was playing off dirt basically. There was no grass. It was in the middle of a racetrack, and
yeah.
You know, you know, obviously living on the farm, we were practicing on the farm, which was pretty rugged. So, and then to go back down to Melbourne onto the Sandbelt golf courses, you know, everything was immaculate, and you know, the greens are there, and the bunkers shaped into the greens and sharp edges and stuff like that. And we didn't even have a bunker at the golf course I grew up at. I helped build one bunker on the first hole there when I was about 15, and that was the only bunker we had.
What's the reason for the 12 holes? Just space?
It was just in the middle of a racetrack, and that's I suppose that's how it got designed. And then we played the last six holes with a different tee, and the 18th was just sort of a longer version of the 12th hole. It was it was something different. And they played. We used to have tournaments around there, you know, like the yearly tournaments that every golf course would have. But it was a 24-hole tournament, so you'd play two rounds of 12. So
yeah. That's a first. Anyway, that's a first for the podcast. I think it's the first I've ever heard of a 12-hole boss there.
But yeah, we did all the same things as over here. I think you have your inter-club competitions. We call it pennant over there. Yeah. Play against all the, you know, you have your divisions and you play against all your other clubs and stuff like that. And we played, you know, travelled around Victoria playing all these different golf courses. Some are sand scrapes. I don't know whether you know what sand scrapes are, but, you know, sand greens.
No, not aware of them, no.
So basically they're oil greens. You still have the normal golf course, but then you'd have a black oil green at the end of it with a hole. It was a tiny bit bigger, but then once you got onto the green, you couldn't land it on the green. You'd have to run everything up because it was like concrete. And then when you got onto the green, you sort of just, you wrote a big like arrow where your ball was. You picked it up. You made it long enough and then you had a rake. So you'd rake it one way and then you'd smooth it back the other way on how quick you wanted it. So if you wanted it quick, you'd take all the sand away. If you wanted to putt a little bit slower, you'd leave a little bit of sand.
I can imagine that to be an absolute nightmare for slow play.
Probably a lot slower once if you misjudged it and you landed on the green and went 60 yards through the back, a big bounce. Now, they were great times. And I think that's probably why a lot of Australians have great short games as well, because the greens are so small over there. You got different conditions all the time, different, you know, people coming from different areas of the country and playing sort of different, a lot different sort of structures of golf courses. That was a big key to, you know, my junior golf.
I can imagine you winning the inter-club competitions if someone else comes from a normal golf course and the next minute you've got to rake the putt out and see what sort of pace they want it.
It was difficult. Like, all the guys in the region that we played with all knew about it, so it was not...
Oh,
there, was,
see, yeah.
There was no to it, but obviously it was all about imagination on how, you know, how you could flight your golf ball and get it to... You know, you could either hit a wedge in and land it just short of the green and get it to check onto the sand scrape, or you're hitting a 7-iron and running it up all the time. It's, you know, there were so many variations of the way you could play it. And if you had the best, probably if you had the best imagination and touch, you were going to be the best at it.
And how did your amateur career progress then from there? Did you make the national setup? Did you the national team as an amateur? And what big tournaments did you play in growing up?
Yeah, sort of progressed pretty quickly, actually. And then, so by the time I was about 15, 16, I was getting picked for the junior sides in Victoria. Played for Victoria Juniors, which we won the interstate competition once. I think we won that. And I also, at that stage, I won the Australian Amateur Medal with Terry Pilgadaris. That was when I was quite young. I also remember qualifying for the match play part of it at Metropolitan in a playoff, and I was 32nd qualifier, and I had to play, I think, Marcus Kane. It was, who was a top player in Australia at the time, and I beat him 5-4 in the first round. But
nice,
those were the good days. I did play for Australia in the juniors as well. Unfortunately, we were in part of the team that lost for the first time against New Zealand, so it's nothing to You know, it's all good to represent the country. And then I got into the squad of the senior side quite young as well. But then, obviously, when I got a bit older, I started to find this stuff. And the golf sort of took a back seat for a bit. And then, and then basically sort of turned pro at that stage. Got into the Victorian Institute of Sport at those times as well. I don't know if you know the Victorian Institute of Sport. It's just a... basically training like the England squad would have, is you know pretty much that was the thing to go in. Was either the AIS or the VIS if you're an elite player back then.
Okay.
Ogilvy, Baddeley, and all those sort of guys went through those. Baddeley and Jeff were in the VIS when I was in it. So,
nice.
It was a big thing to get into back then.
Yeah, definitely. So did you turn professional over in Australia? Because I know primarily you play your golf over here now and you're living over here. So talk us through, obviously, when you turned professional and the transition from amateur to pro back then.
Yeah, it was. I turned pro I can't even remember what year it was. Is that that long ago? But
99, I think.
Yeah, I think it was that. So I went for my card in Australia, got it straight away, played one season on the Aussie tour and just played terrible, to be honest. Not sure why. It was just, even though I got my card for the first time, I think I was still, you know, it's coming out my amateur career going into pro, I was still not playing great. And the decision to turn pro was just because I just didn't want to be amateur anymore. It was, you know, it was starting to get political and stuff like that. So I just wanted to be out. Got my card somehow, you know, grinded my way through it, and probably was too early to start competing against these top guys. If you look back at it now, back in the day, if you missed your card, you couldn't play for 12 months.
Was there no mini tours to play on, though?
No, so if you missed your card, you couldn't even play a pro-am. And the funny thing was, what the year I missed my card was the year I met my wife-to-be, come over to England. I could qualify for the British Open, but because I lost my card in Australia, I couldn't go back and qualify for the Aussie Open. It was sort of almost like a ban back then.
Wow.
It was shocking. You know, I couldn't even play a pro-am or anything like that. So basically that was, you know, I met my wife now and decided to come over here. She's English and I haven't looked going back. The plan was to go back, but I sort of enjoyed it a lot more over here at the time. I was sort of, when my golf was going downhill anyway, I was not in the best of places. Obviously I was young and I was partying quite a lot and stuff like that, what young people do. And, you know, the golf took a back seat for a while. Obviously my performances showed that and I needed to get back on the straight and narrow. And it was great that I met my wife and fell in love with her and obviously fell in love with the game back over here.
Yeah. Well, talk us through the progression over here then. So was it the start of the Euro Pro and work your way up, was it, for you?
Yeah, so I was working. I didn't even play because on the visa that I had, I wasn't allowed to play the sport, basically, but my job at the time. So I just worked for 12 months. And then after that 12 months, I progressed to the Euro Pro and I think I did pretty well, pretty quickly on that as well. I don't think I won in the first year, but I was doing okay. Spent a couple of years on that and then progressed. I think I had a couple of challenge tour starts and did well through that, but and finished top five of the Euro Pro. But no, I never had the money to play the challenge tour those years after. So I just stayed on the Euro Pro and basically was on the Euro Pro and I played a couple of challenge tours up till 2009, I think it was. And in between that, I had 1 year on the main tour in 2004. Somehow got my card then, you know, cruised through, got my card, played 1 year on the main tour, lost a heap of money, spent a heap of money, got myself in debt. And I sort of went back working in Euro Pro at the same time. So
as you're making the progression then from there onto the European tour that year, have you got any funding or is everything just self-funded through yourself?
I've basically been self-funded my whole time. It's
wow.
Good sponsor.
Yeah.
As long as you're paying them back. Yeah. So yeah, I've never really had a sponsor. Been tough, you know, and I think that's why I have done well, because I've grinded it out, because I know that I've needed to, you know, I can't give up just when I have a bad hole. It means putting the food on the table for the kids or paying a mortgage or whatever. So, you know, I'm always grinding out a score to try and, even if it's to win that 10 quid at the end of the day, it's always a grind to get it.
Yeah. So I know it's different now because we're 17 years on, but in 2014, what are we talking for a year on the European tour? How much were you having to 2004?
You would have to, I mean, to do it cheaply, you would still be doing 30 grand at least.
Wow. Is that for, you got a full season there? Like, so you're all over, you're everywhere.
Yeah. That's a full season. That's doing it on the cheap, you know, like probably maybe getting local caddies every week and staying in the cheapest hotels and stuff like that. But if you, you know, just one of those that, you know, I was doing it that way. And so it obviously didn't work for me. And I was, you know, the pressure was too much for me at that time. So obviously I fell back and I have to go back to work to pay for things.
Exactly, that's it. Well, what I was going to say then was, you know, in 2003, when you've actually got your card, what sort of a season are you having there to actually get your card?
So I got through tour school.
Through
all three stages. The first year I was over and I went to tour school. I missed that second stage, I think. But then I sort of, it was one of those things where I'm like, you know what? I don't think you need to do anything special to get your card. You know, my mentality back then was, I was pretty strong with, you know, the way my golf was. I was always a very confident golfer and stuff like that. And then when I missed that second stage, I was just like, because you think, and I think a lot of the young guys still probably think you need to shoot lights out at tour school every round, but you don't. It's just about, you know, you can shoot 2 under every day, which is nothing special, and you're going to cruise your card easy.
Mm-hmm. That's a quality bit of advice, that, for the listeners. Like,
and that's exactly what I did. Obviously, depending on what course you get and the conditions, but if you look at tour school's final stage over the last few years, if you're shooting 14 under for the 6 rounds, you're cruising your card.
Yeah.
And especially when it was at Catalunya, you know, like, that's, you know, you're not really, it's not really nothing special, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Although when I got my card, I shot 21 under, but I finished 7th then. Yeah. So I haven't shot 21 under since. After 6 rounds.
Hey, it must be so much less pressure knowing that when you, if you don't get your card, you can still actually play pro-ams and like be a, and play pro events, not like in Australia.
Yeah, it was. And I think the backup when you've gone through a few stages of European tour school, you do get sort of certain categories on different tours. So there's always backups. And obviously I was doing well on the Euro Pro, so I already knew that I had a challenge tour card to fall back on and stuff like that. So, yeah. And especially over here, you've got all these mini tours now that you can play.
Yeah.
Up some decent money playing those, which you never really had in Australia. It's just pro-ams and that's about it. And then the 5 or 6 big tournaments, but I never really played them.
So when you said that you lost your card in 2004 on the European Tour, hey, what was the ground like then from then on? Did you get back onto the European Tour?
Not for a while. Sort of basically just sort of fell back. Got a loan because I'd run out of money to try and go back to tour school. Blew that, missed my card, and then sort of just come back and was doing Euro Pro and working in between. You know, I was working in golf shops. I was labouring. I was doing all sorts, you know, anything I could do to get by. And then in 2009, I was about to give up again properly because I was just really, really struggling. My brother was over, wasn't even going to enter British Open qualifying. He goes, I'll pay for that. So he paid for my entry and I qualified.
Wow.
And that was at Turnberry. And that sort of just kickstarted me again to keep going. You know, I had a great week. I had a great week there, played with Tom Watson, John Daly, Rory.
Well, talk us through that whole experience, because 2009, that was the one Tom Watson lost in a playoff to Sink, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I always said if I was to get into a major, I would try and play with the best guys who I think is going to be the best. You know, Tom Watson was the best. Greg Norman was there. I wanted to play with Greg. So anytime I had the chance to put my name down with those guys, I would have, just to get the opportunity to learn from them. So I went into the locker room, got there on the Sunday, checked in, done all the signing of everything that you need to do with the open registration and stuff. Went into the locker room to do the practice round, to book my practice rounds, and there was a slot, Tom Watson, Greg Norman, and 2 free spots, and I'm like, I want that spot. Yeah. So I put my name down there, and then the next day, so the Tuesday was up already, and there was John Daly, Boo Weekly, and I said, well, I'll have that spot. So then on the Monday, we get there, and I'm just absolutely buzzing. I'm getting all the stuff from the manufacturers on the range, seeing everyone, all that sort of stuff. And then it was time to go to the first tee. And the crowd around the first tee and the whole hole, it was like 5 deep, the whole hole. And this is on the Monday. Like, whoa. And turned out that Greg didn't turn up.
Oh, no.
He didn't turn up for it, and I was absolutely gutted. But Tom's like, oh, Greg's not turning up. I'm going to wait. I'll wait a bit longer and see if he comes. Are you happy with that? And I'm like, yeah, I'll wait all day if I have to.
Yeah.
And Greg didn't turn up. And then Tom walked to the tee, and it looked like he was going to join Paul Casey and a couple of Poulter, I think it was. And the actual guy that was on the first tee announcing, and even on the practice day was announcing people. He's like, this two young guys from Australia have wanted to play with you, Tom. You know, you think you should hold back. And he did. So, played days holes with Tom, and that was unbelievable. And I said after that round, when I was staying with the guys I stayed with, I said, you want to go and have a bet on Tom Watson? I remember it as clear as day. I said, he will win this week, the way he's playing.
Oh, yeah, and he almost did, didn't he? Just remember it well.
But it was my first experience in a thing, so it was probably highly unlikely I was going to win. But, yeah, he was phenomenal from tee to every part of his game was just absolutely phenomenal.
We went to that one, didn't we?
2000, yeah, we went to Turnberry.
Yeah, we went up.
We were there, yeah. Remember, because Tom Watson hit it over the green, didn't he, on 18 and couldn't get up and down, and it forced the playoff. He had the lead going into the last hole, didn't he?
He almost hit the perfect shot, you know, the green, because the front of the green sort of slopes away. Just land. If he'd landed it 6 feet further, it would have hit a little bit of an upslope and stopped. And I was absolutely gutted for him, absolutely gutted.
Yeah.
But I was the best player in the world on the Friday because I shot the lowest score on the Friday.
Did you? Well done. So you made the cut then and made the weekend, yeah?
Yeah, I made the weekend, but that's about it. I think every other bunker on the golf course apart for the whole week.
So what was it like playing with Rory as well, 2009? How old would he have been there?
He was only, I think he'd only just turned pro, still in the Titleist gear and all that sort of stuff. That was this was the on the Saturday, so it was after we made the cut, and I was playing really good golf up until about 13, 14, and then sort of lost my way a little bit, got a bit tired or whatever, and then Rory sort of fired up, and it made me look like a fool, you know, he signs for a 74 or 72 or something, and I signed for 81, just like that, you know, I thought I was playing him off the golf course, and He just sort of finished birdie, and just made me look like a complete hack. And I remember the 16th there, the one down the hill to the right with the burn in front.
Yeah.
He's got up there and smashed driver over the corner, and I'm like, I'm going to have you here. I'm going to have you. So I just launched one on exactly the same line. We get down there, there's a ball just in the rough on the corner, and there's a buggy that's driven across the fairway, you know, on the spectators' walk area, about 60 yards further down. It's about 50 yards short of the burn. Anyway, this, you know, I look at the ball. Oh, God, it's my ball in the corner, you know, in the rough again. And the guy's like, oh, there's a ball here. It's in the buggy, and it was Rory's ball. He said it was one bounce in the buggy, and I can guarantee you to this day, if it didn't hit that buggy, it would have gone in the burn, which is about 420.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
He's a monster, isn't he? How far he hits it.
And then he chipped it to about, I don't know, a foot and tapped it in, and I hit it in the burn for about the seventh time that week. And I hit it in the burn. I think I hit it in the burn four times, and one of the hot times I wasn't even playing the hole.
Quality stuff. Was that, you say that's your career highlight? Yeah. I know you've had a few wins as well.
Yeah, you know, like obviously the wins are you can't really beat the wins, but as a golfer, you want to play majors as well. You know, it's my only major up to this point. So that's probably, yeah, it's one of the biggest highlights. Obviously winning Challenge Tour events and stuff like that. And then beating Tiger. Well, I finished third in the Aussie Masters that 2010, which was the year after I did well as well. You know, beat Tiger there and stuff like that. So that was another highlight. But apart from a couple of wins, I don't think I've won major things yet. You know, a Challenge Tour is a major thing to get onto the main tour. But as a major, that's definitely a highlight. Definitely.
Well, you mentioned there about Tiger Woods. Did you play with Tiger Woods, or did you just beat him in the tournament?
No, so he was about three groups ahead of me. And he finished fourth and I finished third that year. So
yeah.
everyone says, oh, you beat Tiger, so I just keep saying it.
Yeah, well, you did, didn't you? Do you know what I mean? You did.
If you're beating Tiger, you've had a pretty good event, I think.
No, that's it, definitely, yeah.
Definitely. Well, it's staying on 2010 there. We had a look and your challenge tour win. You beat a young amateur, Tommy Fleetwood, gone on to do great things. Do you remember much about Tommy back then?
Yeah, I think I was the one that started his career off, I think.
There you go.
Yeah, he was, again, you know, that year, 2010, I started off great. It was just after the Open. I was working in the golf shop and I just kept saying to myself in the golf shop, I'm going to win everything this year. I'm going to win everything. I wasn't being a dickhead about it. I was just basically saying that's how confident I was starting to feel with everything. And basically I nearly did that year. You know, I started off on, I think it was Pro 66, which is now TP Tour. Won the first one of that. Then I went to the Euro Pro at Wensum Valley, won the first one of that. I think I've come second in the second one. So I was leading the money list quite comfortably early on. And then that got me an invite into the English Challenge. And then I won that, obviously, I won against Tommy. So, yeah, it was a phenomenal year. It was one of those years where I just don't know what was happening. I wish I could get that. Whatever I had in my head that year, I wish I could get back, because I was just shooting 8 under for fun. I was just freewheeling it. And I think, I don't know what was on, but yeah, I'd love to find whatever I had going on.
You
there.
You just had a lot of self belief.
Yeah,
not a
yeah.
Long way, can't it?
It definitely was. And I think, you know, when I was in that situation, I had that belief that I was going to win everything, and I was telling myself that, and I was doing sort of the right things. I was in the gym, and well, before I was playing, you know, obviously I wasn't playing full time then, but I was in the gym before work and all that sort of stuff. So I was fit and I was healthy. Everything was going right. And yeah, you guys know, it's golf can be so, it can turn like that, you know. Yeah. I could go out when lockdown starts and I could do exactly the same thing, just because the head's clear and I keep saying I'm going to win everything. You know, that's as simple and as quick as golf can happen. And I will be trying to do that when we return. But yeah, it was, I do have a lot of self-belief in what I do.
Yeah. Well, they always say that whether you think you can or you think you can't, either way, you're right.
Exactly. And you can.
Exactly. So you always, that's it.
There's always a can there somewhere.
Exactly.
Definitely. Well, then talk us through how your career progressed from there. 2010, your standout year, was it then? And then how did your golf game and how did it go on the tours as you progressed throughout your career?
Yeah, so 2010 was obviously the great one. Then got my card on the main tour, which I was pretty much flying, doing well again. And then just made some crap decisions, really bad decisions, really. You know, I was everything was in a great spot, and decided to sign with management, which just was the wrong call at the wrong time, and everything sort of went downhill from there. Basically, you know, cost me a heap of money, $25,000 to get out of that contract, and
wow,
yeah. So it was one of those things. I wish, basically, if I knew what I knew now, I would never have gone down those sort of paths. And
The idea of these podcasts is obviously to try and give a bit of insight and a bit of advice. You've been there, you've done it. I mean, what advice would you give to a young up-and-coming amateur who's looking to turn professional if they do get approached by a management company? What advice would you take from that?
Read the contract. You know, you get two or three people to look over the contract if you have to, because at the end of the day, these are the guys that are going to represent you, and they need to be in your best interests.
Well, if you look at the approach of some of the management companies now, it's like all player first. And like some of the players we've spoken to are with like Modest Golf and different things like that. They can't speak highly of it.
Exactly. You know, so many good ones out there now. Like you say, Modest, they've joined with the Clutch and stuff like that. And they're doing amazing things with all the golfers with the disabilities and stuff like that. And it's just what they're bringing to, you know, to the mini tour of golf, as well as, you know, they've got Tyrrell, top 5 player in the world and stuff like that. It shows, you know, having those sort of guys on board with what golf is all about is, it explains why they're doing so well.
So talk us from in 2013. Did your game pick up then? Or did you say you've won? You've won again in the Challenge Tour.
So that's when it's, you know, 2011. I was flying up until those sort of points where everything was going, it was going great. And then, you know, we had our fallout and sort of golf went downhill because I was thinking about other stuff and didn't keep my card, but I've done enough to keep enough of the card to play the year after. Then 2012, I just had a crappy year as well, but somehow managed to get my card through tour school again. I just really started to struggle with, you know, my short game started to go downhill for some reason. Putting was going downhill, and I remember it was the Belgium Challenge, and I got a belly putter off Callaway Odyssey that week before, and I'm like, oh, I just need to give something else a go. And honestly, I thought I couldn't miss. They're like, oh, everyone's, you know, the reason why everyone's going to the belly, you can't miss. Well, that week I couldn't miss. You know, and I remember Sam Little said to me, "Where the hell's that come from? Because you've been playing so poor," and then all of a sudden I was just absolutely blistered. I'm like, it's the belly putter, man. So it was one of those things that just it came out of nowhere. It was one of those weeks where just it was a honeymoon period with the belly putter and hold everything, managed to get it up and down in a playoff to beat, I think it was Will Besling. And I think I just missed my card again through Challenge Tour, but, you know, done enough to keep enough of a card to play pretty much good seasons all the way through. And I think that's pretty much what I did for until 2017. Yeah. Just sort of missing out my card, but doing enough year on year out to sort of keep playing and sort of trying to keep going at some sort of level.
So from like 13 you've won, and then up until 17, are you full time golf there now, or are you still doing bits of work and different things?
Yeah, I was full time then.
Right, I see.
It's full time, and it wasn't until 2017 I dropped back to Challenge Tour. I had a card on the main tour, and then I think that's when it all sort of changed over when the category sort of changed. The Rolex series were about to come into view and stuff like that. And I had the card that I had on, I think it was either 2016 or 17. The card that I was playing off, which was the one just missing my card, got pretty much nearly a full season that year. But the year after, I was exactly the same category and didn't get nothing. Like, I played like 7 events, I think. I remember I was in South Africa. I got my visa for India. I'd entered the Perth Classic in Australia, or whatever it was, Perth Invitational. And those are two tournaments where anyone could have played, anyone in the past, you know, as long as you could get to the tournament, you were in, basically. And that year after, I didn't even get close to getting into India, which was like, so that was basically, you know, I started to get a little bit depressed at not getting into tournaments, and then went back to Challenge Tour, started playing horrendous. And even though I was putting in the same amount of time as I was on the main tour, and then finishing 20th in an event, instead of picking up 20 grand, I was picking up 2 grand, which wasn't even covering the costs. So I was, I'm done.
Yeah, you had enough of that. So what, in 17, did you quit, did you?
Yeah, basically just got halfway through the season and went, I'm done. I think it was after Kazakhstan. Just packed it in. Told the guys at Burr Hill, where I was a member at the time, that I wanted a job. The head greenkeeper I knew quite well, and I said I was after a job, and he seen that I was committed that time. I'd asked him plenty of times before, and he said, no. And I think he knew in my face that I was committed to work, and he said, there's nothing now, but in April I've got a job for you. And then went for an interview at American Golf, got that job. It just happened that I had to go to training, which I couldn't make it because I had a couple of mini tour events. And the guy from Burr Hill called me and said, the job's opened up now if you want to start tomorrow or next week. So I said, yeah, I'm doing that. So I was greenkeeping for 18 months or so.
And was you not playing golf at all?
I was still, I still played a little bit of golf in between. So I basically took my holidays that I had to play the one-day TP events and I played great. You know, I won the Order of Merit that year, 2019 or 18 or something like that. I played really good because I had no stresses. I was getting money coming in from work and I was playing a little bit of golf and I was just going out there and enjoying it again, which was the, you know, what golf's all about, really getting back to just enjoying playing the game that we grew up and fell in love with.
It's crazy that you said that you're quitting Kazakhstan Airport because we've actually had another lad on the pod and he said he was sitting in Kazakhstan Airport and give up golf, exactly the same as you have. But you couldn't even
believe that, would you? Something about that place. I gave up smoke when I left Kazakhstan Airport and I gave up golf as well.
Gave up, yeah.
When you say an American golf there, are you talking American golf like the shop? Yeah, I used to wait, like, be mad just walking in and seeing the European, like... Daniel Gord there.
Yeah. No, I had the interview. I got through past all that, but you would have known. You would have had to do a couple of training days to, before you could, you know, use the till or whatever. And they just happened to fall on the days that I was playing too many events. And I said, no, I'll have to do the training another day. And that's when the Burr Hill jumped in and said, oh, the job's there, which is much better because I'd rather be outside doing the stuff outside than. Yeah. And stuck in the shop.
Yeah, but I can see you playing. You obviously you're back playing tournament golf again. So what's changed? What's the turnaround from quitting in 2017? When did you start picking them up again, or are you playing full time again?
Not full time. No, I'm just I've basically for the last 2021 now. So yeah, so the last couple of years I've just been working as much as I can. Obviously, I was doing the greenkeeping. So I haven't gone back to any main tours or stuff like that. I did get a good friend of mine, James. He sponsored me 2019 to go over and play MENA Tour, which was good. You know, that was with Zane in Zane's Academy. Played over there, finished second on the Order of Merit, coming straight out of not playing full-time golf. I won the second event, which was... It was mind-blowing, really, because I hadn't played much golf and then basically all of a sudden I'm travelling to, like a, basically, Euro Pro, the MENA Tour over in Dubai and stuff and go out and win. And I was just like, it just pumped me up because I knew that I could still make it on the bigger tour, knowing that I've just only played tour events and gone out and won after not really doing much for 2 years. Just it filled me with confidence and that's why I'm sort of trying to progress, trying to keep my body good for the coming years ahead, playing these mini clutch and TP and trying to get my European tour card back.
Are these all, what are they, the MENA and that? Is that, I'm not too familiar. Is that one day events, are they?
No, they're 3 day events.
3 days, same
as Europros, but right, they're all actually, I finished second and they just had like mini order of merits and you got invites to, I got an invite finishing second on the Order of Merit, which was the Dubai Classic last year. I played that. I played an event in Thailand through it on the Asian Tour, Thailand Open. I could have played the Dunlop thing in Japan. Just the timing was wrong. But they have so many good incentives over there to play main tours and stuff like that. And it's a great tour because it's at the end of the season and then the weather's good and the course is great.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, so you playing the Dubai Classic, so that must have given you a good taste in your mouth then for, like, I'm having a go this next year now then.
Yeah, it did and it didn't because this is a funny story as well and the MENA Tour guys will be probably laughing at this when I say, but at the end of the season, we were on the range in Jordan kicking the football around and then two local kids had little goals, so we decided to play a five-a-side or six-a-side or whatever it was, and no one was really passing it to me, and I knew that I shouldn't have been playing because I had a tournament in Bermuda the week after. Jake Ayres just passes this absolute beauty to me, and I'm just like, it's just coming to me so nice, and I'm like, overhead kicking this. So I went for the Ronaldo over the head, you know, scissor kick, to try and score, and I made contact, but my shoulder dislocated on landing.
Oh, no way.
They just popped me up and goes, all right, let's crack on. So I was like this, hobbling off, and getting the ice on it while they're cracked on playing their football game. They didn't care one bit.
Oh, my God. So when was that last year? Yeah,
that was, the end of 2000. Yeah, so 2019, the end of that. So,
Oh, yeah.
But because it was, you know, and then the Desert Classic was like end of January, for, you know, first week of Feb. I didn't have it, and that was November when I did it, end of November. So I didn't have much time to recover. And it was basically only my physio that I see, Henry. He said, I went and seen him about 6 weeks before, and he goes, right, get on the range, start hitting it hard. I could still hardly move. Yeah, so I played, and the Desert Classic was my first tournament, or, you know, basically hitting balls for the week before. I went and stayed with a friend up in at Alhambra and hit balls there and played and cracked on with it. No, I wasn't fit enough to be playing, but I wasn't missing it for the world. No. And I up by one or two. So
you don't say you've got a physio there that you go and see, like, when you've turned pro, 99, like, and you say, like, did you have much of a team around you then? Because all the boys these days, you've got psychologists, strength and conditioning, a swing coach, you know what I mean?
Putting coach.
I had managers all the way through, which I should never have had. So that was the only team that I really had. You know, the only other team was my wife and kids at the time, and my parents, you know, back in Australia, who supported me. Since then, I've sort of, you know, my circle's quite small now. I've tried to, you know, just sort of make my circle that, you know, the people I can trust, and that's about, you know, that's all I need, you know, a couple of friends here and there. And I think that's the way to be if you want to be successful. You can't have a huge following, because someone over here is going to piss you off, and someone over there is not going to do what you want, and you're not going to get the same sort of response out of everyone. So just keep things small, and then you can just do what you want to do, and you know, you don't have to upset people and stuff like that. So back then, I never had the teams or anything like that. And like I said, you know, the only other team was the MasterCard. they were a good team for a while.
Yeah. Definitely. So, what's the future hold for Daniel Gordon? So, what's on the plans one post COVID? Is it have you got Challenge Tour starts this year, or is it?
No, nothing as big as that. I plan on having the Challenge Tour starts after a few of these clutch events that they've got. Obviously, Modest are involved, and they've got Challenge Tour starts and Main Tour starts through the clutch tour. So, I'll be playing a lot of clutch tour and a lot of TP tour probably to start off with. You know, I'm fairly confident that I can finish, you know, I finished fifth on the clutch last year, Order of Merit, won the TP Order of Merit last year. I didn't play a full season on the clutch and finished fifth. So I'm pretty confident this year, if I do what I expect I can do, I'll be up there in the top three, you know, challenging for events and, you know, pushing for those Challenge Tour cards without a problem. So that's on the plan, but that all comes down to financial situation as well. You know, if I could always go out there and play the first three or four events poorly and not win any money at all, and then all of a sudden I'm behind the eight ball with the finances again. So it might have to, you know, go back to work for a bit and get some money to pay for the next entry. And That's just life. That's how I've operated, and that's how I'll continue to operate.
Yeah. Have you got
to sponsor me properly?
Say that again.
Unless someone's to sponsor me properly.
Well, that's it. I was just going to ask then. Have you not got a sponsor at the moment? No.
Not yet. No. No. I'm working on it. But you know, times are tough. We've just come out of a lockdown. It's going to be tough for everyone. So I can't really expect anyone to sort of help me out. It's just, you know, I'll do what I have to do, and, you know, I'll control what I can control. And if someone wants to help me out, then I'm all for it, and that they'll get rewarded as well as me getting rewarded.
Yeah, no, definitely. So what is it? Obviously, we have quite a few listeners. If anyone's interested who's listening to this show that want to support you, how would they contact you? Straight through your social medias, because we can always tag something on this.
Yeah, I've got the social media, Gaunty. I think it's Gaunty 8791. And Twitter, Gaunty Golf. Obviously, if someone can't get a hold of me or anything like that, they can probably contact you guys and you can pass details on. I'll give it to you later.
Yeah, yeah.
All those sort of ways. I'm on LinkedIn. It's pretty easy to find me. It's just the usual channels. If they want to contact me, then I'm open. I'm open to having a chat for those sort of things.
1,000,000%.
Definitely. Well, look, no, as I say, it's been great talking to you, Dan, and getting your journey and getting your story. We wish you the best of luck moving forward, mate. And
thank you very much.
Yeah, just...
Whoa.
Okay.
Before you go, we've got it. We have the Bogey Boys Golf Day, and we ask all the guests, like, we're going to put a big day on and try and get everyone to come down, like a pro-am sort of thing. So, love to get you down. So, the invite's there if you fancy coming down. Be at four.
Oh, 100% be there.
Yeah,
we're looking forward to it, mate. Yeah. We'll probably just obviously wait for this COVID situation. Oh,
plenty of that.
Oh, there's always plenty of that around the Bogey Boys, don't you worry.
The better stuff, though.
No, definitely. We'll get you down there then, mate. We'll keep in touch. And as I say, we wish you the best of luck this season. Get you back on that main tour. Where you belong.
Perfect. It's been a pleasure, guys.
Yeah.
Cheers, Dan.
Until next time, mate. You take care and we'll speak to you soon.
Yep. Have a good one.
Cheers, mate.
Ladies and gentlemen, oh boy, is he out of sync.